August 14th, 1999, with Julie Kanagan and Jeff Lear. And before we get underway, Julie, could you give us a little background on where and when you were born and who your parents were and any other members of your family?
Okay. I was born in Carlick. Of course, December 28th, 1928, and my parents, my mother's name was Sasha. They called her Sasha. Her name was Alexandria, and better known as Sasha or Alice. She came over from Afognak with her parents. My grandmother, her mother, was Ukulina Grigoryev, and she was married to John Grigoryev, better known as Wanka, they called him. And he had a son, Stephen, which was, I think, a stepbrother to my mother. My mother had a sister that I know of, Xenia, called Xenia. My mother was married to Carl Johan Christensen. Basically, I think he was a Norwegian from the old country, came over to Carlick with many other non-natives, white men to Carlick to come and fish. And he ran away from Norway when he was about 14 years old on a ship and never went back. And he lived in San Francisco for many years until he came up to Carlick, and he asked my mother's parents if he could marry her. And she was only 15 at the time that they got married. And so eventually when there was three of us born, my oldest sister, Catherine, who has since died when she was, I think, in her 20s, from TB, as well as her husband and daughter, all died from TB at that time. And I think that was in the 1940s when this happened. And I have a brother, Charles Christensen, who lived in Larsen Bay, and he's married to Clyda Norell Christensen. Norell is her maiden name, and you've interviewed her, I believe. And then, of course, myself. We're more or less, I think we're about 3 years apart, the three of us. And I've been wanting to find out what my mother's real maiden name is. Her stepfather was Grigoryev, and that's all I know. But in talking with Johnny Pesterkov, he says he remembers that she was married before Wanka. And he remembers in Afognak, where they used to call her husband that she was married to before Wanka, they called him Lyovka Shadonik. And he doesn't know if that Shadonik is a nickname or a last name. And that's something I'd like to find out, because it makes me wonder if that isn't the last name, then what her real last name would be, then who would be other relatives that I may have, you know. Because right now there's just my brother and myself.
Do you recognize that name, Jeff?
No, but it ends in Nik, which a lot of Russian last names end with.
That's Shadonik.
You know, like you get Ik, a lot of Russian names ending in N-I-K, Nik.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So it could be a last name.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no way of knowing. But
no,
it sounds like it could, you know, possibly could be a last name.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what Johnny said, he didn't know. Mm-hmm. And many people that I've talked to don't really seem to remember. And and of course, in 1999 here, it's kind of hard to remember back, you know, back then.
Lyovka, huh? Lyovka?
Lyovka. Mm-hmm. Lyovka. Shadonik. I asked Alicia to, you know, I wrote those names down for her, and I asked her if in her, at her convenience, sometimes when she's going through something, if she may run across that, if she would kind of just...
It may turn up the 1900 census, U.S. Census records has all the names, and then the church records that Lydia Black, mm-hmm. her assistant, are translating it could turn up there as well.
Well, there's a lot of them in here too, right? I mean, yeah. But you haven't seen it in there.
I don't think so.
I was thinking possibly also marriage records. You know, if she, there might have been marriage records. And I think those, I don't know if they would have been in Russian. I don't know if you have any marriage records of a Fognak in...
Well, some of those church records are marriages.
Are in Russian?
Mm-hmm. But they're all being translated, so...
Really? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But many people traveled to Karluk from Afognak. A lot of people from Karluk were from Afognak. And I think those days they traveled, you know, rowing in a big skiff. I think they just fill up a skiff with all of their belongings and, you know, cover it with some tarp or something, and they'd row along. And I think, of course, they took them. Must have took them some weeks.
So did your father arrive in Afognak and meet your mother, or was he already living
she
in
was already li- She was already living in Karluk.
Oh, she was.
Yeah, he was there fishing. Mm-hmm. In Karluk they had the different beach gangs mm-hmm. along the waterfront there. And he was, and they had, I think what they refer to as straw bosses, you know, the boss of a gang, and he was one of them, you know, boss of one of those beach gangs, and of course, you know, then met my mother and asked, well, I don't know if he met her, I know he asked for her, you know, her hand in marriage, and I don't think she really had a choice in the matter. I mean, it was just arranged, you know, he wanted to marry her and asked her folks, and they okayed it. Hmm. Now, I don't know if he gave them anything, you know, for her hand in marriage, but he did it. And when I was just a toddler, I think they got a divorce. They moved down to Aberdeen for a number of years after they got married. Because my brother was born down in Aberdeen.
Really?
Uh-huh. And they lived down there for a few years, and then just before I was born, they moved to went back to Karluk, and I was born there. There was a lot of Scandinavians that married women from Karluk then, too. The Antonsons and Johansson, you know. There's different ones, so.
There must have been a lot of fishermen out of Aberdeen area.
Yeah.
Because my grandmother married one too.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, out of Aberdeen? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That must have been a real fishing port then. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I went down and I visited down there, you know. After I found out where, you know, that my brother was born there and that they lived there for a while. So it's interesting to go back and look around.
So then you met Dennis from Afognak and moved there?
Yeah. Dennis, I sort of was back and forth, and I was married once before, but Dennis used to come down and fish to Karluk, and of course we met, and he after the season was over with, he came back to visit, and he came back several times, you know, and over a period of a couple years. And then in 1956 we got married in February, and we married in Kodiak. We got married in Kodiak and went to Afognak, and they had a reception for us there. And then on the boat we went on to Karluk, and they had another reception for us there, which was nice. And then we stayed there for the rest of the winter and summer, and he went fishing. Denny was born there. And then right after fishing season was over with, then we moved over to a Fog Neck. He and I and baby Denny and my three older girls. And we lived in a Fog Neck there for 4 years. 56, and then we moved to Kodiak in 1960.
So what do you remember about what a Fog Neck was like when you first moved there? That'd be in 1956?
It was just a quiet, sleepy little town, you know, just like Carlock. The difference, you know, we had running water in Carlock. You know, we were very fortunate. We always had running water. And I don't know if it was because of the cannery, which set it up so that they could have it over there. But we did, you know, from the streams down the mountainside. Mm-hmm. So in the Fog Neck, of course, we had to pack it. We stayed on the Aleut, in Aleut Town. We stayed in the house just a little ways from where his folks live. And it was just a very nice, it was, everybody was very congenial, you know, nice people, social life there was like any other village, you know, like in Carlock. There was always your dances, which, you know, with local music, live music. There was always people like Seth Larson, who played the accordion, and others who played the guitars, you know, and then they'd have the dances every now and then. And of course, there was always some birthdays, anniversaries, and things like that that people used to always gather together and celebrate. It was very nice. There was the Orthodox Church as well as the Baptist, the missionary there, who we got involved in both. You know, of course I'm Orthodox, so I always went to church, but I was always involved at the with the missionaries there, because they had other activities such as putting on plays, which I participated in, you know. And then sewing clubs. We had sewing clubs. We used to go from, you know, meet together different women and bring our art, crochet work or knitting work, and do that. It's very nice. And they had a store, just one general store, post office, Nettie Ellison. At the time, she also had the radio, the communication radio, where at that time there was no telephones or anything like that. The communication was through a telegram. So we received and sent telegrams, and she had the radio to do it. It was interesting, after the tidal wave, when we went back and we went to her, you know, we're looking through the different homes. And when we went into where the Ellisons used to live, you could see all the different telegrams, you know, that were spread all over the floor from, you know, I think from the wind and things flying off from where they were. And it was interesting reading some of the old telegrams that we received. We should have picked some of those up and kept them. But who knows at that time, you know.
Was there a priest there at that time, or?
There was no priest. They used to come for different purposes. Sometimes for a wedding, sometimes for a Russian Christmas, and other occasions.
Who owned the store at that time?
I think it was Sheely's.
It still was Sheely's.
Yeah, she was, they were still there. And Of course, we had every time, you know, we had more access to Kodiak than, you know, when we were in Karluk, so it was, you know, we always made our trip to town. We did our grocery, you know, big grocery thing for the winter. You did some through town. Crafts and Kodiak used to have their anniversary sale every fall. And so everybody used to take advantage and go in and take advantage of that big sale and get a lot of their case goods, you know, during that time. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, really nice because you didn't have to, you know, order as many. We still ordered some from a place down south. I don't remember the name now, but... and they'd come on the boat, but this way you could just bring them home. They grew gardens, you know, they did some in Karluk too, and when here, of course, they had always had the gardens. Your potatoes, rutabagas, carrots, turnips, your heartier vegetables that they you were able to store for longer periods of time. It was quiet. There was only, towards the end, when we left there was only one car, and I think it was Alvin Nelson that had it. Mm. Yeah, one of the Nelson boys, I don't remember, had one car. And I remember when we first moved to Kodiak, the first night we moved into Kodiak, we went to bed, we bought a Quonset hut rather than rent, and so we bought a Quonset hut. We stayed in a Quonset hut when we first got there. And that first night we went to bed, we're laying there and it seemed so noisy, you know, mm-hmm. There was traffic on the street, cars going back and forth, and then the refrigerator motor would come on, and then the fan in the oil stove, you know, had an oil stove, but the fan on it would come on, you know, which we had oil stove in the fog night, but there was no fans. But there they did in Kodiak.
Was there electricity?
Pardon me?
Did you have electricity?
In the fog? No.
Nothing. No, not even generator, nothing. So you
we didn't. Some people may have, but we were.
So you weren't used to any mechanized noises at all?
No. It was very quiet.
Yeah.
And so we're just laying there, and finally Dennis said, he says, how the hell does anybody sleep around here? We're laying there, and finally he got up and he unplugged everything.
Including the refrigerator.
Yeah, he unplugged the refrigerator. He says, I can't do much about the traffic, but I'm unplugging everything. You know? And so he did that, and finally we went to sleep, you know. But, of course, eventually we got used to it. Another thing, when, you know, we're going to live in a fog neck, there was no running water, and so we had and no electricity, so we had to do everything by hand.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with, you know, like diapers, that was the first thing. You were busy from morning till the time you went to bed. And so the first thing I did was start doing diapers, washing them and hanging them. And then I had and most everybody had a motor washing machine, which you had to start a motor and crank it like, you know, well, it was not a crank, it was a lever that you stepped on. I can remember just my leg used to just go numb from cranking, especially in the wintertime, you know, sitting there, goddamn, you know, start. When your husband's out fishing and you're trying to do all of this.
Yeah.
It was very frustrating, because in the wintertime, you know, the oil would be thick and you'd have to, you know, you learn to put some hot water in it first and let it sit so it'll kind of warm up the oil.
Mm.
Eventually it would start and you'd do that. And of course, hang clothes out. And we saved water. We had like those drums or wooden barrels, any container, big containers that we could have, and put them in the corners of the homes to catch all the rainwater for washing and dishes. And we used that, you know, whenever we didn't. And used that whenever it rained, and then, you know, and packed it, of course. But when we moved to the Quonset again, there was an automatic washer in this Quonset. And I looked at it and I told Dennis, I said, wow, I said, Dennis, all you have to do is push the button. And it starts, you know. It washes and rinses and washes and rinses and rinses. And it dries, and it wrings them out, you know. I said, now all I have to do is hang them. I didn't have a dryer, but I had the washer.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, what a you know, big difference.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, we really lived a nice quiet time.
So you were already in Kodiak when the tidal wave came?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you remember about that event?
Well, that was the last day, like I said, that was the last day I worked at King Crab. That was the last day I ever worked in the cannery. And we were working on at King Crab, working on crab. My husband was out fishing on the Spruce Cape with Seth Larson. And they had just got in that day from fishing. And he came down and picked me up at work. And we came home. And I started, and the kids were all home, of course. My older girls were, they were early teens, you know, early teenagers. And so I sat down and I started cooking. And I sat down by the stove, and all of a sudden I can feel the table shaking, you know. And I said, gee, your girls got something in the washer, you know, because sometimes when it's spinning, it would kind of shake the trailer. And no sooner did I say that, then it really started.
Mm.
And then I jumped up earthquake. And so we all ran outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I stood on the porch there and shook and shook and shook and shook. And it just seemed like it wouldn't quit. One of my boys, you know, was hanging on to the rail. You couldn't stand still by yourself. You know, have to hang on to something. And you could just see the ground, mm-hmm. you know, in waves.
Mm-hmm.
The trees were just almost on their sides, on each side. And I remember seeing this little Volkswagen that was next door neighbor's Volkswagen, completely off the ground and down, off the ground. And several times I've seen that. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, is this the end of the world? You know, I kept thinking, what did I read? You know, I was trying to think of what I read about the end of the world, what was going to happen, you know. And we thought that was what was happening. And very scared. And it eventually stopped, of course. And, you know, 5 minutes is a long time in fear. It just seemed like it, you know, that you never want to go through something like that again. Mm-hmm. So we went back in and my husband, Dennis, we decided, you know, there's going to be a tidal wave, you know, with an earthquake that big, there's going to be something. So I told the kids, I said, well, you better get your shoes and your coats. Get them ready. I said, because I think we're going to have to. We're going to leave, there's going to be a tidal wave. So I told them to gather their shoes and their coats and go to stand by the door. And I went and I got the, I don't remember, some bread, I think different things, whatever I could, you know, whatever I could see there I grabbed, as well as some, I think a couple blankets, and we took out to the car. And then we had a 57 Chevy station wagon, big beautiful Chevy station wagon. And we got into that and come to find out that we didn't have any gas in the car. So Dennis had kicker oil motor, outboard motor oil,
gas.
Mixed gas for the motor. And so he took that and he put it in the car. And so we got it started and we went up towards Pillar Mountain. Of course, part way up there, then it started sputtering. And somebody from behind came by and helped push us, they were pushing us up to the hill there. You know, of course, you, like I said, you know, when you're in fear like that, trying to get away from the tidal wave, you're going to, you know, do anything you can to get up that hill. And so they were pushing us, you know, from behind with their, must have been somebody with a truck.
Legs and Edie.
Was it Legs and Edie? I don't even remember. But we couldn't even get all the way up. There were so many cars up there. You know, we were way down the line and we got up there. And we were partly up there, about halfway up, as far as we could get. And we had to stop, and we were listening to the radio in the car. And the new, you know, the Down South Channel, down Washington, their stations had Kodiak 15 feet underwater. They were reporting down there, which was just scary for, you know, family members or, you know, any relatives down in Washington area. So I was thinking about my daughter who was going to school in Oregon, Chamawa, and hoping that she didn't hear anything like that, but of course, you know, they did, which she later told us about. But you could also hear the crackling of things, the noise of things breaking down in down the waterfront. You could just hear it. And I didn't see the wave itself, but I could hear things, you know, like I said, that noise moving. It was a terrible sound. And of course the kids were in the back trying to fight.
You were still in the car at the time?
Yeah, we stayed in the car. Well, you know, he would get out.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to stay in because once you get out, then all the kids want to get out, you know, and you try to keep them settled in there, mm-hmm. you know. So he went out and I stayed in to try to make sure that they stayed in.
Mm-hmm.
All the time trying to, you know, they were all trying to fight also. They wanted to get out and run around, of course. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't blame, but we didn't, you know, we tried to keep them in the car. But we stayed up there for most of the, well, later on they told us that we could go down to the school. I don't know what time.
You were there all night.
That's what I thought. It was early in the morning is when they told us that we went down to go to the school. And that's where we went to the school where everybody was. Yeah, it was the next morning. And Legs and Edie, who owned the LeGru, who owned the Beachcombers at the time, he was at the school and he was cooking. He was cooking for everybody. I don't remember who provided the food or anything like that, but they were, you know, he was doing the cooking for everybody that was there. And the school was full of people. There was people all over. And you know, you can look out and you could see rooftops floating out in the ocean, and boats were in every, you know, direction all over. And come to find out, that day of the earthquake, right afterwards, he and several others left port in Kodiak, and I think met the wave head on. He was on his way to Portline, or to Fog Neck, to find out how his mother, you know, he was worried about his mother after the earthquake.
Mm.
So that's where he was headed when he met the wave. And there was Eli Malutin from Eli Wasili from Karluk. Johnny Reff's dad, Albert.
Albert Reff.
Yeah, Johnny Reff, dad, Albert Reff. Pinamaria from Yuzinki. Ada and Teddy Panamariov, yeah. Ada Panamariov's husband. And there was Seth, and there was one more.
Harry Nielsen.
Was it Harry Nielsen? Mm-hmm. And all of those perished, of course, on the boat.
Well, they were all on the Spruce Cape.
They were all on the Spruce Cape. They left Kodiak together on that same day, right after the earthquake. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, they found a piece of the boat on Spruce Cape, which had the name Spruce Cape on it.
Mm-hmm.
How long afterwards, Dennis?
A couple of years. Found it on Kodiak.
I thought they found it on Spruce Cape.
Kodiak.
Do you know any photographs of the boat when it was around the Spruce Cape?
Spruce Cape?
No.
I don't have any pictures of the Spruce Cape, but I'm sure maybe some of the family members might, because it was Seth's boat.
Yeah.
What was his last? What was his real name?
John.
Was his name John?
John
Marson. Was he a junior?
No. Pinky was a junior.
Oh. Pinky was his brother.
Oh, let's see.
What they call him, Sax?
Pardon me?
Is that what you keep on calling him, Sax?
Sut.
Oh, Sut.
Yeah. I what we always knew him, but he was always known as the Sut.
Oh.
Hickey named him that.
Sut. Dennis grew up with them in a fog neck. Sut was sister to Tina Larson.
He was married to Eddie Pestrikoff.
She was married to Hubie Roland. Roland.
Mm-hmm.
You know the Roland girls, Olga and Julie and Elizabeth. And Rick Roland,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Olga, she lived in Old Harbor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Sut was their father?
Their uncle.
Their uncle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Their mother was a brother.
Oh, okay.
Sister to him, to Sut.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Magnol was also an aunt to them, isn't she? Magnol Drabeck,
mm-hmm.
as well as Laura Freeman. Magnol is, like her sons are Tony Drabeck, Tony and Alvin Drabeck. They would be nieces to Sut, or nephews to Sut. And Laura Freeman, her children are like Bob Freeman. And what is Bob's brother's name?
Dick,
yeah. Dick.
Then they got a sister, Lois.
Lois down, you know, she's down south, yeah. Dick and Bob live in Kodiak, and Lois lives down in Washington.
I think Dick's in Anchorage.
Pardon me?
There's a place up in Anchorage, Dick does.
Yeah. Laura was also before Freeman. She was also married to Del Valle, and so some of their children are, of course, are half brothers, sister to Laura, Dick and Bob.
So after the tidal wave, did you hear anything very soon about a fog neck or what kind of condition it was in?
You couldn't, it wasn't right away because all communication was gone. Mm-hmm. There was no communication. And I think it was mainly through, it was just a matter of I think a week. During the course of the week, I think we heard, you know, people were trying to make sure they get some news, you know, back and forth. And I think we heard about a fog neck. During the course of that week, different people. Somebody else went over after the earth tidal wave.
Sunny
came back. Sunny came from, he went over to check on his folks, I think, after that. And he came back and he, you know, met.
Sunny Chechenev?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who did he go over with then? He didn't have a boat. I think he was fishing with somebody else and I think they went over. Yeah.
Ooh, Sunny?
Yeah.
No, he went on his boat.
Did he have a boat then?
Yeah. I don't know which boat it was. Nirvana, maybe?
He was running a boat.
Yeah.
But it took a long time. You know, there were so many aftershocks. And about a week after that aftershock, a week after the main earthquake, there was another fairly good-sized, which was considered an aftershock. Really, it was quite heavy. And I think it was, what did they say, measured on the Richter scale? I think 7 point, I think, something. I don't remember. But it was quite heavy. And it was right outside of Kodiak. according to Gary Carver the other night, he said that it was a, it, the earthquake that we have in 64, in March 27th, was a very heavy, a major earthquake that doesn't happen very often. I think every 200 years or so. And that, so because we had it in 64 and it's 30 some years away, I go that we probably won't likely have one probably for another couple hundred years. And according to what they've, you know, measured on the scales, that consistently it's been between 200 to 700 years apart, these big major earthquakes. They're a different type. I think they're rolling kind. They're not the sharp, you know, that we have, you know, off and on frequently. And he said that Kodiak, of course, was in the line of that fault line, you know, where this happened. And that the, that according to, you know, their studies, that the West Coast, like Washington, Oregon, and California, would most likely have one soon, and it could happen anytime. And that was kind of scary to hear, because, you know, you have family members down there, and you kind of wish you could get them up here. But, you know, talking to them is a different thing about moving away. But that's pretty, you know, it was quite interesting, him talking about, you know, the differences in the different earthquakes. I never thought about it. I thought, as far as I was, an earthquake was an earthquake. I didn't realize that there would be a difference, that one would happen, you know, every, you know, several hundred years, and others, you know, quite frequently.
Well, do you have any other Fargnak memories that you could share with us when we wrap up?
Just that it was kind of a nice time in our lives. It was the last time that we ever lived in a village. And while we were there, I think life was simple. It was hard work, and it was a very peaceful time. You know, just enjoyed it. There was no, like I said, the only thing we had was a radio, so it was very nice. We created our own entertainment, such as just. And socializing, just visiting a lot more with each other than you do now, which we did quite often. There was always visiting back and forth with the different other couples, families. And that's something, once we got to Kodiak, that sort of stopped. You know, you just don't... We did some, but not anymore. You know, like today, it's something that is almost... It's almost non-existent. And I think that's what's so nice about coming out here with a lot of the elders here, is because you're able to go back to what we used to do before. You know, coming here and just sitting and enjoying the company of, you know, people, and visiting and reminiscing. And you know, the telephone doesn't ring to disrupt you, and the television isn't on, so that you're constantly having one eye, an ear tuned to the television. You've got everybody's undivided attention, and just sharing back and forth, and it's really enjoyable. And I think that's why, like I said, I enjoy, and Catherine and Lucy and all of us enjoy it so much out here, because we can capture back what we used to have. Those of us that live that life, you know, we don't want it to be gone. We'd like to, you know, have it come back again. It probably never will to the extent that we had it, but maybe if people can start relating to one another again, I think would be I think would be a real positive step towards quality of life. And if this can do it even a little bit, and we can share that with the rest of our children, maybe they can, you know, kind of begin maybe to try to at least begin some relation, you know, visiting back and forth with people. People just don't visit at all. I bumped into Julia Naughton several times at the store, and like she always says, my goodness sake, she says, I haven't seen you. We live in the same town in Kodiak here. We don't see each other. I said, if we didn't eat, we'd never see each other.
You know, because that's it.
Huh?
We didn't eat, we wouldn't meet.
Yeah. But we, you know, that's about the only time you see anybody is when you bump into each other at the grocery store. Or the post office. And then, of course, then you're in a hurry, so you just exchange a few quick words and that's it.
Okay, well, thank you, Julie.
You're welcome.